Initiate countdown.
8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Warning.
She's alive! Alive!
Warning.
Puny man matches his cunning against a monster from Mars running rampant.
Warning.
Dead or alive, you are coming with me.
Warning.
You gotta tell him! Silent Breed is people!
Warning.
Hello, pretty, pretty.
Warning.
Welcome to the Martian Drive-In Podcast.
With your host, Terry Frost.
The Martian Drive-In Podcast is a four-weekly podcast of speculative fiction movie appreciation. Each 4 weeks, Terry and his guests will pick two movies and strip them to the bone. They can be new, old, or in between science fiction, fantasy, or horror. What they have in common is that they aren't the big blockbusters that everyone knows about. Martian Drive-In looks for the interesting films that might not be on your radar, but that might just be worth your attention and appreciation. Go to marsdrivein.blogspot.com. Feedback is always welcome via email at cultguru@gmail.com. That's K-U-L-T-G-U-R-U at gmail.com. Or you can leave a voicemail at area code 206-2033-299. Enjoy!
Hello and welcome to the Martian Drive-In Podcast number 5. My name's Terry Frost and I've got a guest this time, the redoubtable Dittmar winning podcaster, Ian Mond. How are you, Mondy?
I'm very good, thanks. Don't forget the Kronos.
And the Kronos Award, yeah, but yeah. Nobody knows what that is. So good. Hang on, I've got a Dittmar up here. I'll hold it up to the microphone. There's my Dittmar from 1995. And
that actually is an awesome Dittmar. Who designed that one?
Lewis Morley.
Yeah, of course. It's beautiful.
Lewis, who worked on The Matrix and other movies.
Yes. So
I've got a piece of art from a big-time movie guy. And he also did the pig's head from Razorback.
Did he?
Yeah. If you go to the Silverton pub outside Broken Hill, they've got the wall of photos from all the movies they did.
Yeah.
And there's a picture of Lewis hanging out on the back of a ute next to a giant pig's head. In the Silverton pub. I'll put that down now.
I'll just say that I haven't actually received mine yet. Our Lego one happened? Yet. No, well, there was an issue with the Lego pieces.
Yeah.
Because they're making it out of Lego. So.
And Joshy's going to take it apart.
He hasn't destroyed the Kronos yet. He's okay. Considered it. His hands have gone in that direction. Mm-hmm. This is my little 2-year-old son. And the Kronos is very fragile.
Yeah.
So, you know. Yeah. Well, we don't have one, though. Yeah.
So basically, you're going to get a Dittmar and it's going to turn into a racing car.
Correct. Well, he'll see. If he sees it, because he loves Lego, if he sees it, it'll go.
Yeah. So basically, don't show it to him until he's
out. No, Will Kirsten may actually house it, though.
I think that may be wise because you shared it with Kirsten. For your wonderful podcast, The Writer and the Critic.
Yes. Well, yep. I think it is wonderful. Do you enjoy it, Terry?
Yeah, I listen to it, yeah. I listen to it basically because Kirsten's got a sexy voice, but apart from that.
Okay, that's so you don't find my voice sexy?
Not my kind of thing, but I'm sure there are any number of people out there that do.
And I love your setup here, Terry. I love the way you've put this together.
Yeah, we're in the new man den.
Yeah, the man cave. Yeah, it's very nice.
We haven't finished it yet because we've still got the walk-in, the built-in wardrobe that's going to become a deep bookcase.
We are literally surrounded by pop culture.
We are. We've got Welsh money boxes and Luke Cage action figures in the back there. We've got little statues of the Statue of Liberty, the Burj Al Arab, the Eiffel Tower. We've got tons of movies. We've got an ashtray with a hula girl on it. We've got a Roboraptor up the top there. And, of course, we have my machete.
Of course, absolutely.
Because you have to.
Yes. Now, I would think that if there was an earthquake, you know, Melbourne's had a couple of earthquakes.
Yeah.
And you were in here at the time, you'd be smothered to death by pop culture.
No.
No, you think you'd survive?
I've got the reflexes. I've still got the chops there.
Oh, do you see the karate kung fu moves that come out?
Yeah, it was really interesting because one of the top bits in the bookshelf up there, I'm pointing, which nobody else can see, comes off.
Okay.
Sal moved all that into from the other room and clocked herself with that top piece.
Okay.
So it's already happened. But anyway, tell us about your two podcasts, Mon.
Well, we have Writer and the Critic, which is Kirsten McDermott, mm-hmm. who is an author and myself. For that one, I had to convince her to do a podcast because she wasn't that keen to begin with. she had a number of commitments. But what I said to her, well, how about you recommend a book to me and I recommend a book to you and we talk about it? And it's got to be something that we enjoy so that we're coming from a positive start, so it's not just something where we shit on for 2 hours. And that's, and we're 22 episodes later, that's how it's gone.
Cool.
Although I've fucked up just a bit in the sense that I'm well behind on my reading, so next year I'm going to struggle to find books to recommend. So I fucked up a little bit. But that's our writer and the critic.
Yep.
Shooting the Poo, which has just come back after a two-month hiatus, is basically Anthony Mitchell, or Mitch, Dave Hoskin and myself talk shit for an hour and a half about, well, a bit like the stuff you talk about, movies.
You guys are doing the alien movies.
Yeah, we did part one, and part two will go up not tonight, but probably tomorrow night.
Yep.
So we did the first two films, just came up. So, but we do films, TV. We'll be doing... You got a section in this on what you've watched recently.
Yep.
Well, I'll talk about what I've watched recently because that's connected to what we're doing next. No, so, cool. It's been fun. That literally, we called it Shooting the Poo. You know how many people don't like the title and won't listen to the podcast because of the title? I don't understand.
Because
you're
not saying shit rather than poo?
No. Because because the title is called Shooting the Poo. Just because that's what the title is. So,
why won't they listen to it? Who's done that? I want you to name names. You're going to name names to me.
Well, she said it on her website, so Tansy hasn't.
Tansy's a nice lady from Tasmania.
She is, and maybe it's too rude. But no, my wife thinks it's ridiculous. I came up with
the title. No, you can't say my wife here. You've got to say Jules.
Jules thought it was a stupid title. Yeah. Kirsten thinks it's a stupid title. Dave
takes it. Basically, chicks don't like your
second podcast. No, because Dave hates it. Yeah. Mitch doesn't mind it. Mm. I think it's great because it's what we do for.
Yeah, I mean, what you probably need to do now after so many episodes is tell them it's branded now, it's in the public mind, and you can't change the title.
Absolutely.
That would be the way I would go.
Absolutely. I agree, because you can't just call it something else now.
No.
And Mitch has come up with a kick-ass logo, which we did on the most recent
STP
podcast.
Logo?
Yeah, yep. New STP logo. So, I mean, it's done.
Mm.
We should probably just call it STP.
Well, you can always do that. I mean, what you do is you have it Shooting the Poo, but you guys call it STP. It's like Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema calls themselves GGTMC.
Yeah.
So you can kind of slowly elide to that trend. You
know, I think we should. I think transition to it.
Yeah.
But I love podcasting.
It's fun.
You inspired us, Terry. Seriously, it's an honour to be here. I said this before because you got me listening because I was listening to Paleo, the early episodes of Paleo.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what got me thinking, well, fuck, if Terry can do it anyway. No. But
that's how it works. That's how I inspire people, by showing how fucking easy it is.
Well, in a sense, yes. And I thought it'd be fun. It sounds like fun. I mean, I don't know. I use it a bit to catch up with friends as well, which is a bit mean to use a podcast to catch up with your mates.
I don't think it is at all. I think that basically the thing that humans do better than anything else is form communities.
Yeah, true.
And with the podcast, we're forming a whole new kind of community. So that's what we're doing here, and don't excuse it. It's great. I've got friends now all across the planet because of this stuff, and that's not to be dismissed.
Well, you do, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, so how far outreaching is not this particular, well, Paleo in particular?
Well, both of them kind of have the same grasp. We get people from northern Europe. We get occasionally Central and South America. We get all of North America.
Yep.
We get a whole bunch in Asia. I think a whole bunch of Chinese people are basically pirating them and selling them in market stalls. If you're not and you're listening to it in China, I do apologize. But somebody suggested that to me and it's kind of stuck in my head. And we get a number of Australians and New Zealanders. The biggest is the North American one. England's pretty big too. But basically people who commute and don't like to listen to shock jocks.
What's your weekly hits?
On which one?
We're talking shop here, but for both.
Well, I kind of go by monthly. I'm averaging about 1,900 a month on Paleo Cinema.
You're shitting me.
No. And on the, I've got 100 odd episodes. So if one person downloads all the episodes, it's 100 odd.
Yeah, true.
But Martian Driving Podcast is a slow burner. It's going to have to go through that same arc again. Yeah. At the moment, it's about 90 downloads.
So each episode's about 90 downloads?
No, well, that's all up.
Okay.
Yep. But I did have it doubled up with Paleo Cinema up until this episode.
Okay.
So it's standing on its own from now on, and I'm going to do a little blurb for Paleo Cinema just saying, you know, go over there to get Martian Drive-In.
Okay.
So we're going to do it that way. And, it's fun. It's seen me through a lot of stuff, and it gives me an excuse to come into the man cave and and just hang out.
Because you've been doing it for five years.
5 years September.
Done it through them. You were podcasting during the fire in Victoria, weren't
you?
Yeah,
I was podcasting through the fire. I was podcasting through my own breakdown. I mean, everything.
Yeah.
And, actually, Sal and I did a 13-episode podcast, which is on archive.org. I haven't told anybody this yet.
Because it didn't come out?
Or? No, it's called Chew Like Buggery. And we did 13 episodes of just her and I shooting the shit before I did Paleo Cinema.
Oh, really?
So we started podcasting, I think it was 13 months after the podcasting became anything at all.
Really?
Yeah.
And this is, you're never going
to
release this?
If you go to archive.org and type in Chew Like Buggery, you can find all 13 episodes.
Okay. Why'd you stop?
Sal and I kept arguing because I talked over her all the time, and she got the shits with me so badly. She just went, fuck it, I'm not doing it anymore. But there's lots of just waffling about what we were doing and stuff like that. We had one tiny little microphone with one of those really skinny microphones with a tiny little nub on the end of it, not even a proper mic.
Yeah.
And we just crouch over it in the other room.
Yeah.
Just crouch over it together to talk.
That brings a tear to my eye.
Yeah, well, that's it. That was old school. This is before I got a mixer and cool shit like that.
Yeah, well, and it is cool. A Belkin mixer. I don't know. Kirsten's is a bit more old-fashioned than yours, but because I'm now comparing, you know, what you've got.
No, that one, I kind of like my mixer. But
plus, she's got the fuzzy microphones, you know.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to get fuzz on the end of that one, but okay. I don't know if I get fuzz on this one. But I may upgrade the mics at some stage.
Do you think this is interesting anyone? Us talking about microphones?
I don't know. Got no fucking idea. We've only been doing it for 10 minutes. But, anyway, let's move on to the second bit, and that is news from the planet Mars. And this time, for a nice change, there is a ton of it.
Here is the breaking news from the planet Mars.
Okay, yeah, I did talk previously about the Curiosity Mars rover.
Yes.
It landed successfully, as basically planet Earth now knows. It's the size of a mini miner, and it started taking some really kick-ass pictures from Mars. I mean, I was off sick when it landed, so I streamed the whole lot on the web, from the web. And you would not believe how fast that thing got through the Martian atmosphere. It was like 5 or 6 minutes.
They took all the thumbnails recently together, and they turned it into a film, which just went up. Am I allowed to say that I'm completely underwhelmed by all this?
Why?
I don't know why. I'm a bad science fiction fan.
No, your problem is you're too fucking young to remember moon landings. And
I wasn't born, so that helps, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But it's cool the way moon landings were cool. And, yeah, because they had the telemetry coming through. About 6 minutes from not being in the Martian atmosphere to landing.
Okay, so there are all these nerds on the internet, such as yourself, who are watching this live. So this is momentous. This is big. We shouldn't look down upon this.
No.
So when all the NASA people are hugging and licking each other at the time it lands, that's not for show. They're genuinely ecstatic.
That's a culmination of 5 years of their work, and then they get the cool stuff, which is basically driving the sucker around Mars. They actually named the landing spot now Bradbury Landing.
Oh, okay, that's pretty
cool.
They've
given it a name now. And the way it landed was fantastic too. Yeah, it had the parachute to slow it down.
Yeah.
And then it had this kind of platform above the rover, and it dangled the rover from the platform on wires.
Yep.
And the platform that it was dangling from had retro rockets on it.
Really?
So basically they cut the parachutes. The retro rockets kicked in on this thing, and they had like a marionette hanging underneath it.
Okay, yeah.
And the retro rockets dropped it, and as soon as the rover hit the ground, the wires cut themselves. And the platform with the retro rockets drifted off and landed somewhere else.
Ah, okay. That
you should see the footage of that.
So they would have done years of computer modeling to figure out.
Yeah.
Because there've been fuck ups with
Mars
before.
Nobody's done it before, and they were really worried because there were about 12 zillion things that could have gone wrong.
Well, wait. You say no one's done it before, but what have we landed on the past on Mars?
Those ones we just landed with parachutes and stuff.
But.
Well, we
what's the difference between this one and that one?
Well, we landed one about size of 3 iPads.
Okay.
Which was a little tea tray one. They landed a slightly bigger one, which is the size of a coffee table. And they thought, fuck it, we're going balls to the wall now. We're going to put something on the other side of a car. And they've been zapping rocks with lasers, and the rock they zapped has got its own Twitter feed. they put some incredibly high-res pictures up, and it looks like Broken Hill. No kidding. If you had a shot of certain parts of Broken Hill without the dust, without the weeds,
yep,
it would look like Mars. It looks so mundane, but you realise, yes, but it's, you know, 48 million miles away.
Terry, for the people who will say this money should be spent on schools
yep.
and the economy, what do we get out of this?
What we get out, well, basically the money is spent on Earth. No, nobody sends money to Mars.
Well, no, but they had to develop yep. all the technology.
Yeah, but the technologies have got spin-offs. I mean, we wouldn't have anywhere near the things like weather predictions we've got now so people can predict crops and things. We've got mundane shit like Velcro. We computer chips. I mean, the computer miniaturization was pushed by that industry.
What would this give us?
What will this give us?
Do we know?
We might find more about how to look after planets.
Oh, okay.
For a start. And if you find out, yes, this is a planet that did have water but dried up and turned into a, you know, it's probably got some kind of water somewhere, but it turned into a very, very dry place. You can learn a lot about the geology of it and translate it to certain areas of the Earth.
Okay, because without me sounding like a complete ignoramus, quite easy for me though, I might add. Has it been officially proven that Mars was filled with water, or is this something that's
still...
It
wasn't filled with water because it wasn't like a water balloon.
No.
But,
but had oceans.
Well,
had...
there is evidence of liquid water. There are things like gullies and things with washes in them. They have found some water ice in with the other ice, I think, up around the poles. They've got a lot of carbon dioxide ice, so basically dry ice.
Yep.
And there is some evidence that there might be something like a salty muck with a bit of water in it under the surface, which is one of the things they're going to look for.
Okay. And they found bacteria?
No.
No bacteria?
No, but they are going to look. The new probe's got a little...
So this is what one of the things they're searching for.
It's okay. One of the things they're searching for. They're looking for anything they can. They basically crammed a lot of technology into this thing. It's four-year-old technology because... That's how far back you've got to work to get one of these things up there.
Science has had a pretty good year. God particle.
Yeah.
And this. It's not too bad.
Yeah, well, you know.
2012.
Well, I think what it is the science geeks are starting to have a voice, so all the cool things that are happening are getting a bit of publicity for a change.
Yeah.
And that makes very much a big difference. I think getting a bit of oxygen to the fire really makes a hell of a difference on this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. But well, I'm now more excited by that, Terry, because you've described
what you should
it very
do
well.
Is go and look at all the graphics and the pictures and think, yeah, well, that yeah, it looks like a bit of desert, you know, middle of Australia or something. But no, the temperature is really low and it's 48 million miles away. I mean, and this isn't science fiction. This is actually people doing stuff now and sending pictures from a place people have been dreaming about since
I just didn't want to they could see it. I just didn't want this idea that just because you're a science fiction fan, you have to love stuff with Mars and the moon and all that stuff, because that's not my interest.
Okay.
I'm not an engineer. Got no engineer. I'm surrounded by engineers where I work, but I've got no engineering interest myself. And my science fiction-y sort of love is more around the conceptual stuff than the, you know, the hard science landing shit on things stuff. So,
well, that's only the start. I mean, you know, except just basically sending something there to see what's there. We'd be stupid not to follow them.
Oh, I agree.
And there was that thing where the reality TV show, the Dutch guy who's going to send a whole bunch of reality TV people to Mars.
I heard about that.
And send them. I mean, I like that idea. I don't care who they send and how they fucking get there. I mean, if I had choices, I'd have people like Andrew Bolt, Eddie McGuire, and. And half of the people on the Republican side of the American Congress sent to Mars. Just to
that Aiken guy.
Yeah, Aiken. Aiken, the one that said that women's bodies can reject rape sperm or something.
I'm sorry to laugh because it's not funny. But
no, it isn't funny, but...
send him to Mars, definitely.
Yeah, basically he's only saying what a whole bunch of them are thinking, and they're creating their own mythologies to justify their political beliefs, and that's a dangerous and interesting thing at the same time.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so Curiosity got there and it started tooling around Mars. It's heading for a place called Glen Elg, which is the same name as a beachside suburb in Adelaide.
You're kidding.
No, they named the place at the bottom of the mountain Glen Elg. They only did it because it's a palindrome.
Oh, that's such a nerd thing.
I know that, but you got to remember, these are the geeks that have conquered the world.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, you know, you're not going to get certified public accountants sending Mars probes up. This is your fucking dreamers and your geeks. And
hey, my uncle'd say different. He thinks he can probably send them to Mars. But
well, that's it. And Monty's going for a second drink.
Is that all right?
No, that's fine. Yeah, we want a
solo sound effect there. Yeah. I'm drinking solo, not hard liquor.
Yeah, and I'm drinking water because I'm a virtuous person. But yeah, I mean, I love the fact that Curiosity got there. I think that it should spark something interesting.
Well, I
rather than sending ex-fighter pilots to the moon,
I wasn't interested at the time, but Terry, you stoked my flame.
You've got to check the website out.
I will.
Yep. So, yep. Let me see what we've got next on the list. Oh, controversy.
I like controversy.
Bah, bah, bah. Okay, I'm going to find some controversial music now. Okay, riddle me this, Batman. Here's what I've got.
Okay.
They're doing a movie version of Ender's Game. It's in post-production now.
Yep.
Based on the Hugo-winning thingy by Orson Scott Card.
Yep.
The question is, Orson Scott Card, for the last 25 years I know of, and I've seen the documents, has been writing anti-gay and homophobic op-eds in various small newspapers across America.
He's very religious. He's a Mormon.
Well, yes, I know. That doesn't mean he has to be stupid,
no,
too. But I'm not comfortable. Ever since I heard that, and I've read some of the stuff, and people have given me copies of what he's wrote as far back as the early 90s, I haven't bought any of his books or given him any money.
Yep.
I'm not comfortable with his political beliefs, so I choose to vote with my money.
Yep, okay.
So, the movie's coming out.
Yep.
Do people go to see the movie so they can get a little fanny squee with all the space fighting and stuff like that? Or do they realize that they'll be giving in, empowering somebody whose belief systems are not what we would expect people to be, who we want to patronize?
Well, I would say that, first off, 95% of people wouldn't have a clue. Even though they've read Ender's Game, probably don't relate it to a particular author and wouldn't know his politics.
Yeah. And, of course, the studio's got a vested interest in keeping that out of the media.
Oh, absolutely. And this is a book that's taught at schools and is in libraries and it sells a bazillion. I mean, you only have to hear people, Jonathan Strahan and Gary Wolfe have spoken about it a couple of times. And the fact of the matter is, it's still one of the best-selling novels, SF novels out there. And it's been, how long, 25 years, you said?
25 or so, 25, 30,
So it's got legs. People are going to go anyway.
Yeah, but...
I mean, he'd have to rape someone on TV. He'd have to rape a 98-year-old woman on TV and splooge in her face and then kill her and eat the corpse, and then people would still possibly have that odd, well, maybe not.
In some countries, that's paper. but basically, for me, I'm not comfortable doing it. So I put it up on Facebook. I put that proposition. You know, do you boycott it personally if you're against his politics in order not to make him wealthier?
Some would argue that it's not his anymore. It's now directors, it's the screenwriters, it's the actors. Well, how much influence has Orson Scott Card had?
I don't think it's influence. I think it's basically drawing a line in the sand. It's like, I'm not going to use any kind of World War II analogies at all.
Yeah,
but it's like finding somebody who you find fiddle kids. I mean, it's the Michael Jackson kind of thing.
Yeah, okay. But, I mean, no, World War II is fine. If you want to go Nazi propaganda.
No, because as soon as you mentioned the Nazis, you lost the argument. So I'm not gonna do it.
Godwin's law. Yeah, I get that.
I'm not going with Godwin's law. But what I'm saying is that I'm uncomfortable enough with the readings I've had of the stuff he's written to not contribute my money to
the text itself, which I have never read. I've never read Ender's Game. So the people who I trust say that text itself is very problematic. Mm-hmm. There's an interesting review on Tor.com by Joe Walton, who used to love the book but now has reread it recently and found it to be an extremely problematic book and how it deals with war and, you know, children and all that sort of thing. So putting aside his politics, the text is maybe a reason to boycott it, let alone, you know, the fact that he's a homophobic prick.
But from my point of view, it's purely him.
Yeah.
I'm not really comfortable with that. I think that there are a number – we've got a wealth of choice in good writers. It's not like there's only two or three on the planet. We've got an immense number of good writers that we can encourage with our money.
Are you consistent? Like if something by Dan Simmons was turned into a film tomorrow – because of his Islamic views. Yeah. I mean, would you go see that? Or there's Frank Miller. I mean, there are millions of them. They're everywhere. Once you start to dig.
Well, honestly, the people that I really like Kim Lane, Stanley Robinson.
Yeah.
I think not so much for his politics, but for the fact that he's willing to write utopias and he doesn't automatically assume everyone's going to be in conflict.
Yeah.
And I think that's a worldview I want to encourage in a positive way. I think Pacific Edge is probably one of the best utopian novels I've ever read. And
he's on your side of the politics as well.
Well, yeah, he is to a certain extent, but I mean, I'll read Heinlein and I occasionally read Jerry Pournelle.
Yeah.
And I totally disagree with their politics and Larry Niven. But I like Robinson's stuff because he's taking it from a different political viewpoint in that like I said earlier, people create communities, and that's not to be dismissed. It's not about everybody trying to kill everybody else to get all of the assets. I mean, some people are operating that way, but there are people like the people doing the Mondragon communities in northern Spain who have found a different political model for capitalism. And that's mentioned in 2311, the Kim Stanley Robinson novel.
2312.
2312, sorry. I'll get the first edition. but yeah, basically, I kind of like that stuff. I like that stuff because it's challenging. I think it's more challenging to write a utopian novel well and make it interesting than it is to write a dystopian novel.
I agree, but okay, well, let me ask you this then.
Yeah.
Orson Scott Card, he's written this thing. Mm-hmm. Do we not publish his work into the future, and do we try and ban him?
I'm not talking about banning. I'm talking about a very
no. Because people do move that in that direction. The moment they start to say, "Let's not go to the film, let's boycott it," they do move in that. Well, actually, it should be banned.
I don't think it should be banned. I think that there's nothing wrong with giving people a well-rounded view of who the man who wrote the book is, and let them make their own judgment. Some people are going to say, "Yeah, but I want to see the movie," and that's fine. They're making that judgment. But for me, I'm uncomfortable enough with this geezer. Somebody suggested to me the alternative, illegally download it if you want to watch it.
Yeah.
But I think that the studio, if this kind of, and these sort of things can go viral, if the movie's big, they're going to start looking at Card and start looking at his background, and a couple of journos dig into it, and it's going to blow up.
You think so?
I think it will. I think, yeah, I mean, really? apart from the fact that the media is constantly hungry for juicy, salacious, and nasty stories. There's always that schadenfreude about people who become famous. It's like finding out that J.K. Rowling used to be a hooker. That would be viral in news. She wasn't, of course, as far as I know. But if that sort of thing came out, it would be an enormous news story. And with Orson Scott Card, because of all that background, they're going, yeah, well, the kids are reading this book by a well-known homophobe.
Again, in America, is anyone actually going to care, considering the... I mean, oh, no, actually, you know what? I shouldn't knock America, because they're what? How many states now have okayed gay marriage, whereas Australia...
To be honest with you, I think that the conservative voices we hear are loud voices.
Yeah.
But I'm yet to be convinced they're a majority.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's easy to shit on America for being ultra-conservative when they're well ahead of us in terms of...
We don't mean you, Zom. You're a lefty and we love you for it. But I understand what you're saying. But I met a whole bunch of people when I was in the States, and that admittedly was in 98. I met people who were going, oh, yeah, guess what? The gun shop's got a discount of 20% this week. And headed down to the gun shop and things like that. And I also met some very, very left-wing people.
Yep.
I think that dynamic, I think there are very, very powerful people that are trying to spin America into a right-wing place. But I'm yet to be convinced of the fact they're being successful.
I would argue that it always seems more extreme when there's a Democrat in the big seat.
Particularly one who does not have pale skin.
Mm, exactly.
Yeah. So that's a controversy bit.
Well, you're going to put that is that a poll up on your website?
No, I haven't figured out how to do polls yet. If someone can tell me, I'm more than happy to put up a poll. But for me, I'm not comfortable enough to give the man my money. I work for it, and I get to choose how I spend it.
I don't give a shit about either the book or the film, so if I don't illegally download it, I probably won't go either.
Yep. Okay, fair enough. That was it. If anybody has anything controversial for the next one they want me to bring up and hash around with people, happy to do it. KULTGURU@gmail.com. Let's take a break, and then we'll talk about what we've been watching and get into the movies.
If men must work, so must they play. And of all the brilliant podcasts in the world, none offers more in the way of relaxing V-nostalgia than fascinating Rotcast Podcast. Many the purple-lipped pleasure seeker that sip the deep ruby wine of the internet. Cabernet and Merlot are never far away, and there is always Malbec, economical, but seldom cut rate. Busy men are apt to think of Rotcast mainly as a podcast about wine, and this is true, but Rotcast is also headquarters for the Chapter and Verse Movie Quiz, enjoy listening to a verbal description of a single DVD chapter. Blindly you grope to identify the scene and the film. Beyond the glories of fermented beverages, past the joy that lies between the cinematic and the mysterious, you'll discover the matchless musings of a true American baby boomer. This is V-nostalgia at its best. Listen at work, if you will, but listen for play. Rotcast. R-O-T-C-A-S-T. Rotcast is registered clean, available on iTunes.
And I'm back here with Mondi. What have you been watching lately, man?
For the next episode of Shooting the Pooh, because the one about to go up, but the one after that, we're doing David Lynch.
Okay.
And so I've been watching a bunch of his films, but right now I'm watching Twin Peaks.
Okay.
So I haven't watched Twin Peaks since it first showed in 1990, so yep. This for me is a 22-year turnaround. I've got to say it holds up.
Okay, good.
Really does hold up.
I think I've got a copy of it somewhere.
You've got to get the Definitive Gold Collection.
Why?
If you can on... What? Why? Did you say why?
Yeah.
They remastered it. It's beautifully okay. Remastered. Cool. It looks fantastic. I know you like that sort of beautiful. And I've only got the DVD, not a Blu-ray or anything. Yep. So I don't know if they've done a Blu-ray version of the Gold Edition, but it is gorgeous.
You can watch Blue Velvet yet?
Yeah, I've seen Blue Velvet. Yeah, tits.
I'll give you a love letter, fucker. Yeah.
I just laughed every time he said tits. He called it. I know it's misogynistic, but still, I loved it when he said tits, tits.
Yeah, and the way they kind of re-engineered Roy Orbison to be really creepy.
Oh my God! Yeah, that whole scene with Dean Stockwell. You mean that's
There's a movie called Sleeping Dogs Lie.
Yep.
Where the mother of the main girl in it, her secret is that she once slept with Roy Orbison.
I love Lynch. This has just made me love Lynch more. So that's what I've been watching recently. Yeah.
Okay. Now I've got to remember what I've been watching because I've got Mizzo where I put up what I've been watching, and let's see, Mizzo.
Love you that. And Jules. Yep. She does her Mizzo.
Yeah, Mizzo's great because it helps you remember when you've got to talk about it. Let's see. I did watch Catwoman on the Moon from the 1950s, which is a very bad science fiction movie. It's on archive.org. The other two things I saw.
So what's this? This archive.org, I think you've mentioned it before.
Yeah, it's a website that archives public domain material.
Okay, so that's public domain.
Yeah, it's public domain. So you can watch Catwoman on the Moon. On the Moon, not on the womb, without guilt. Let's see, what else I watched? I watched The Dictator with one of your mobs, Sacha Baron Cohen, on it.
A Yid. Yes, he's a good Yid.
Yes, and I think John C. Reilly has a cameo in it as a CIA killer. It steals the whole fucking movie in this one cameo because he's talking to him and he's about to kill him because he's the dictator. And he's talking to him about how fucking good Billy Elliot is. On stage, and he's telling, "Did you see Billy? Yes, I saw it. Is it great or what?"
So worth it, you think?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of worth it. There's a few little good bits and pieces. And the other thing I saw really good is an Indonesian movie.
Yep.
Directed by a Welshman.
Yep.
Called The Raid, also known as The Raid Redemption.
Okay.
It's an action film set in Indonesia. A SWAT team go into a high-rise tenement run by a drug lord to kind of break it up.
Yeah.
And they're outmatched and outgunned all the way through it.
Sounds
and it's
good.
Got a whole bunch of Indonesian martial arts.
Where'd you find this one?
The buzz is out there. People have been talking about
it. Oh, it's new. It's not...
It's new. It's 2011.
Okay.
And it kicks ass. It's out on Blu-ray and DVD in Australia now. It's out on Blu-ray and DVD in America. Sony Classics reissued it. And it's just like kick-ass action from the word, from the start to the finish and original action.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Can I just warn people? Do not that I don't think anyone here listening would, but the five-year engagement, if your girlfriend partner says, I really want to see it and I want to see it with you, tell them to go away or fuck off or whatever you'd say to your partner.
There's a good reason why we have two TVs in this house. And that's exactly it. Not that Sal watches that kind of movie at all, but it's to avoid that kind of conflict. So if she wants to go and watch endless seasons of Bones end to end, I can actually watch what I want to watch.
This film, The Five-Year Engagement, goes for 2 hours and 15 minutes. The two movies we're going to be speaking about in the next 5 minutes go for an hour and a quarter.
Yeah.
What each, and it's and they're these are this movie's produced by Judd Apatow.
Yeah.
When did comedies have to be over 2 hours? to justify their run length. Do you remember when comedies were about 75 minutes?
75 to 90.
Yeah.
Except things like It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World, but that's got an ensemble cast of everybody that was funny in the 1950s and 60s.
That's true. I've seen that.
Yeah. So, but with that exception, yeah, I mean, punchy works. Nutty Professor's not that long a movie.
No, and it means
the original version.
There are three gags or four gags, but they're spread over 40 minutes, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone, once every 40 minutes, you laugh. I mean,
well, nobody says no.
Too short.
Nobody says no to Judd Apatow in Hollywood because he's been so successful. He's got the room to do what he wants to do, and he maybe you need that little voice saying, "Hang on, it's a bit long." And I don't know that Apatow gets that.
Well, don't see it, Terry. Yeah. Do yourself a favor.
So I'll see if there's anything else worth mentioning here. And I've got a big long list. I did rewatch The Rocketeer because I got a Blu-ray.
Any good on a rewatch?
Yeah, I don't mind it. I think it had chops.
It flopped, didn't it?
Yeah, but then it was the 1990s. I weren't quite ready for this kind of movie.
What was the technique? Was it CGI or
no? It wasn't CGI. It was mostly done as physical effects and back projection and things like rear projection. And I did rewatch my favourite steampunk movie.
Oh yeah, which one?
The Extraordinary Adventures of Adele Blanc-Sec, which is a French one. Besson did.
Okay.
It's set in 1911. It's about an adventurer. And she's trying to find the Egyptian secret to immortality.
Wait, is this recent?
Yeah.
This is the thing that they were hyping about a year and a half ago?
Yeah.
And that's come out. I've completely missed it.
Yeah, I picked it up on DVD really cheaply. And it's great fun. I mean, it's got all these little French in-jokes like the resurrected mummy, who's a very nice person, walks past the Louvre and the pharaoh stops and looks and goes, "That would be a good place for a pyramid." Right, where they've got the glass pyramid now in the Louvre and shit like that. And there's little pop culture references all the way through it. And it's just a little bit of fun.
Does it look nice?
It's beautiful because it uses Paris, and of course Paris hasn't changed that much.
Yeah.
A little bit of CGI to tart up the buildings. But it looks good and it's a lot of fun and, it's just playful.
He's an odd director, Luc Besson. He's a bit uneven.
Yeah, but this one's very playful. I didn't know he directed it. I think he produced it.
Oh, okay.
But it's playful and a bit of fun. It's got a pterodon or a tyrannosaur in it.
Of course.
It's flying around Paris.
Okay.
It's got really weird-looking character actors in it, and, it's just a whole bunch of fun.
Is this one going to be one of your comfort films when you...
I'm actually doing some Hammer film noirs after this. This is my comfort film after I finish podcasting.
Okay.
But, and I recommend them highly, all of those ones. What else? That's about it for that kind of stuff. So we'll get into the movies in a sec. And I think we're talking about frequently asked questions about time travel.
Yeah, we'll do that one first.
2009.
Yes.
Time travel. It'll turn your brain into spaghetti if you let it. Best not to think about it. Best just to get on with the job in hand. Which is destroying the enemy before they're even born and have a chance to threaten us. We're expecting any resistance to be light. The ancestors of our enemies have yet to evolve any thumbs, or indeed spines. But that does not change the fact that they may one day evolve into a species that may pose a threat to us. And for that reason, we are going to rain down a fiery death upon them that will turn the surface of their planet into a radioactive desert, because we are the Planetary Peace Corps, and that is what we do! Now, are you nappy-wearing motherfuckers ready to lock and load and get it on?
No. Okay, frequently asked questions about time travel is a 2009 science fiction comedy directed by Gareth Karavik from a script by Jamie Matheson. Stars Anna Faris, Chris O'Dowd, Mark Wooten, and Dean Lennox Kelly. I'll give you the praise here I've got from the Wikipedia. The film follows two social outcasts and their cynical friend as they attempt to navigate a time travel conundrum in the middle of a British pub. Anna Faris plays a girl from the future who sets the adventure in motion. So, yeah, basically Chris O'Dowd, people know from the IT Crowd.
Yep.
Anna Faris, people know from any number of lame comedies.
Yep.
And, Mark Wooten apparently plays a fake female psychic in some TV stuff in the UK.
In BBC Three, that's what he's famous for.
Yeah, that's what he's famous for. And Dean Lennox Kelly's a jobbing actor who looks like a weedy little runt.
Yeah, he does look a bit weedy. He looks familiar, though. He looks like you've seen him in a million films. But
he played Shakespeare in a Doctor Who episode.
Of course.
See Doctor Who, boy? Yes. You missed that one, didn't you?
I did. Of course, that's Dean Lennox. Oh. Oh, I've let down the team.
You're going to have to hand back your TARDIS.
Oh, I absolutely. My TARDIS key the whole lot. I
absolutely,
agree.
Yeah.
And my scarf.
But, yeah, I mean, that bit that I just played is from right at the start where Chris O'Dowd is running the space ride at an amusement
still
place.
Still
and it's got screaming kids, puking kids. And basically he's gone over the top in his portrayal of the space patrol guy. And his mates dress up as dinosaurs and hand out vouchers to Dino Burger Bar in the place. And two of them are science fiction fans, and one of them writes stuff.
Yep.
And the other guy's a cynical, smoking little weedy runt played by Dean Lennox.
You don't like Dean Lennox, Kelly, do you? Because
I kind of like him. I think he grows on you in the...
He does have that lovely gag where he says sci-fi and...
I'll play that clip for you right now.
Oh, okay, all right.
Here we go.
I do talk about other things, you know.
War,
right?
Sci-fi?
How many times? It's not sci-fi. It's science fiction, or SF, which can also stand for speculative fiction.
Jesus. You wonder why you can't get laid.
I can. Do. Some girls are into science fiction.
Yeah, you see, that's your problem, right? Your ideal girl is you, with tits. In fact, your ideal girl is him.
I object to that.
So that gives you the dynamic between the three main characters.
How many conversations have you had? I mean, I can remember conventions where people have said, don't call it sci-fi, it's science fiction or SF. I mean, that actually made me, I won't say piss my pants, but that does get me laughing because that's true. It's obviously written by someone who actually knows.
The science fiction.
Yeah, the community as well.
Yeah, probably. And let's see who was written by Jamie Matheson.
I did check up on IMDb what his deal was, but I didn't bring notes. So sorry about that. But I could check now, couldn't I? On my iPad.
Yeah, you got an iPad.
Yeah, I do. Mm-hmm. So you keep talking.
I'll keep talking. It's by BBC Film, so it kind of has that slight Doctor Who-ish feel in the mise en scène.
Saying it looks a bit cheap?
No, I'm saying it looks cheap. I think the special effects that they use, and they are used sparingly, are kind of on a Doctor Who-y level. The bit at the start of the space patrol thing, and the bit, basically the story is, they find a space discontinuity in the men's room of the pub, and every time they walk in and out of it, they come to a slightly different time, or a vastly different time, if they go into the ladies' room.
Yeah.
And, they kind of circle back and see themselves, and they've decided, because they've watched too many Star Trek episodes, that they really shouldn't have any communication with their previous selves.
Yeah. It's funny, I'm laughing as you're talking. It isn't a rip-roaring funny film.
No, it isn't. It's got some low-key chuckles.
Yeah.
And the funny bit's right at the start where the puking kids are.
Yeah, that's probably the best gag. I think you said that before. It's probably one of the best gags. But it's a very entertaining film. So even though it's not like you're not going to poo your pants with laughter, you won't be bored.
Yeah, particularly given that it's basically a one-set movie in a sense, set in a pub. You've got the back garden of the pub where there are some swings. You've got the snug. You've got the main bar. And you've got a couple of toilets. Men's toilet really rank and manky.
Yeah.
Women's toilet's quite nice, really.
So Jamie Matheson has written some episodes of Being Human. Mm-hmm. And I think he wrote the Dirk Gently stuff.
Okay.
That's recently been. Well, it says one episode of Dirk Gently. So he's been involved with that. But his writing CV isn't particularly large.
How old is he?
It doesn't say.
Okay, so he could be a fairly young writer too.
Yeah.
Which is one of the problems with getting a resume that long.
Well, there's a number of years between drinks for him. So, look, I mean, he says he also produced FAQ, but okay. I don't know what else. He might work behind the scenes in London. Who knows?
Well, you could have a little caravan he sells hamburgers out of too. Yeah.
I've got to say, the film does take time travel very seriously, and the second film we're going to talk about takes it uber seriously.
It
but
does.
But even though it is, I suppose, for the gags, all the little paradoxy stuff and circular stuff is all taken very seriously, which I appreciate.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bit where there's a guy in a red hoodie standing at the bar and suddenly later you find out it's one of the characters standing next to himself.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so, I mean, it's been well planned. And Anna Faris is really good.
Yeah, well, Anna Faris is always cute. She was also in The Dictator.
Oh, was she?
She was a mate, because she was like a hairy armpit vegetarian Whole Foods shop owner in The Dictator.
Do you want to say that again? Because that was a bit of a mouthful.
Yeah, hairy armpit vegetarian whole food shop owner.
I can't imagine Anna Faris with hairy armpits.
Well, you know, I can take the hairy armpits or leave them. I have no preference either way. But, yeah, kind of with the short black hair in there and cops a lot of shit from Sacha Baron Cohen, as indeed everybody in the movie does.
Yeah, of course. So, she's good, but it's a harmless film.
Yeah, it's kind of light and... if you're going to get offended by swearing, you'll probably get offended, but nothing else I can see in the film really is offensive.
Oh, even the swearing's pretty light on.
Yeah, I mean, there's shit and there's occasional fuck, yeah. I think, yeah.
And there's a bit of blood in the bar when a couple of events happen.
Yeah, there's a murder on the dance floor, basically, yeah. In the bar, yeah.
Yeah, I chose it because we were doing two time travel movies, yeah. But there's no doubt there's probably less to say about this one than there is about the second one. Which, I mean, if you just have to compare Primer with Frequently Asked Questions to see which one gets more internet discussion. But that doesn't mean it's a bad film. It just means it does what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
And, I'll tell you what, I was able to watch it with Jules. She hates these sorts of films.
Okay.
But she was quite happy to sit through this one. And for passes the Jules test, yeah. Which is, you know, all things SF shit.
Sucky, yeah.
Sucky.
So she didn't sit through Primer with you?
Oh, fuck no. No.
Okay.
Absolutely not. But, yeah, so she easily sat through this one, so no problems.
Okay, well, yeah, that's it. It's light, but it's not offensive. Chris O'Dowd's always good, and he started doing things like Bridesmaids now, so he's kind of crossed the pond.
Well, he's become big, hasn't he? He's in The Sapphires as well, I noticed.
The Sapphires, the Australian film about the Australian girl group that went to Vietnam to entertain the troops.
That is based on a true story.
It is. The women themselves were...
Why have I not heard about it until this poster went up?
Because they're Aboriginals.
That is really it, isn't it? And yeah. Possibly because I went to a Jewish school that probably didn't teach us too much.
No, we
got taught Australian history, and I don't know why I would not have heard about...
To be honest with you, there are so many good stories out there. There are World War II stories about Aboriginal soldiers. You hear more of them in the Northern Territory, and I've got, of course, the link with the radio gig I do in the ENT. So I touched base with it and I listened to their radio.
But were you aware of the Sapphires as a...
I was really, really vaguely. I might have heard something about them in the 60s.
But he's in that. So they got him over to do that. He's great in this, but it's the IT crowd character, though.
Yeah.
With a few minor tweaks,
you
know.
It's not a stretch for him to play this character. And the thing is, it was the first step outside that comfort zone. He's done 3 seasons of a very, very popular TV series. He's tweaked it with a slightly different character.
Yeah, I mean, he's done a couple of Judd Apatow films. Yeah, he did
Bridesmaids.
Sorry, you just said that. I mean, he's different in that because he's playing a cop, from memory.
Playing an American cop. Yeah, part of,
with an accent as well. So that was...
Yeah, it's a really weird accent, though. And, I mean, Chris O'Dowd, I think he's good because he's trying new things. And one of the things I do is I really like actors that don't rest on their laurels and cash checks.
No.
If he's doing The Sapphires and playing an American guy in The Sapphires, he did Bridesmaids and was playing off Kristen Wiig pretty well.
Yep.
I think that, it'd be interesting to see what he does. I think he's more a character actor than a star.
Yep.
And that's always a good thing for a career's longevity.
Well, he's not a good-looking man.
No, he's Irish.
You think all Irish people are ugly?
No, I think they've got a high percentage of it. I think all of them are.
Per capita.
Peter O'Toole's Irish. I mean, fuck, he was beautiful when he was young.
There's always a bell curve.
Yeah, there is a bell curve, yeah. And actors tend to steer to one or either end of it. But, he's got a good Irish mug on him.
Yeah, and obviously genuinely funny. This is not hard for him to be funny.
Yeah. And he's good with kind of intensive dialogue. He can do the tech speak and stuff like that.
Yeah, comic timing spot on. In fact, Mark Wootton's the same. You know, again, obviously someone who's obviously been brought up in the comedy sort of world and knows what he's doing.
One of the things I've got about the three main characters is I think there's something very slightly lacking in the ensemble. You know how when you get three characters clicking just right?
Yeah.
IT crowd being an example. Yep. Richard Ayoade and Catherine, whatever her name is.
Yep.
And Chris O'Dowd. I think that ensemble works a lot better, but they've had time to build the ensemble.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think all we get is the pub conversations, and I think they force it a bit too hard that these guys are friends, because it's not sort of – doesn't feel right. Dean Lennox-Smith just seems to insult them the entire time.
Yeah, and he's the only smoker in the group, and he goes through some interesting epiphanies during the movie.
Well, he has the most interesting arc out of all the characters.
He does, and they do end up in a post-apocalyptic future, which for some reason still has crisps in the pub. And there's a nice little moment in that where they hear a squeaking noise. I'm not going to spoil it any more than that, but there's a nice moment, but they don't kind of invest in it the way they maybe could have. Maybe it's a budgetary limitation. It wasn't a large budget film. But just having that moment, there's stuff they could have built with that on.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they chose not to.
Yeah, look 75 minutes.
Mm.
That in of itself is a reason to watch it. It's a short film.
Yeah, it's not going to – it's a one you can watch on your iPad during a long commute.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've noticed that a lot. Even just on the simple tramp trip to work.
I rewatched this on my iPad at work.
Did you?
Yeah, I got in a little early for because – you know,
be honest, Terry, you were in the middle of the day.
No, I wasn't.
Oh, I can't be honest.
No, I did it. I did in the morning because that way there are fewer people cooking weird foods in the kitchen.
You get that as well.
Yeah, we get to, well, we've got such a multicultural workplace. It ends up being like the Suzuki night market.
It's not the necessarily Chinese food or whatever. It's the stench, the pervading stench of this food.
It's the overlapping
stench, yeah.
I mean, any one of them are good, solid foods, but you get like, okay, somebody cooked it, onions in the microwave 2 hours ago. Kind of smell.
Which I've got to say, frequently asked questions is better than onions in the microwave for 2 hours.
It's way up here compared to onions in the microwave.
Just, do you have a marking system, or do you just say
no? I just kind of say, yeah, it's worth it. It's not going to take long. It's a light little thing. You can sit down with a couple of mates and a few drinks and enjoy it. You can get your wife, who doesn't like science fiction, to watch it with you.
You can do it as a double bill with Primer. You can watch them both on the same night because all up, they're probably the same length as the 5-year engagement. So,
But, it's kind of recommended. It's not a perfect film by any means, but I think that they're telling a story and it's intended to amuse.
Yeah, and it's internally consistent, which is a big deal because most time travel.
With science fiction.
Yeah, because most of those films sort of fall apart very quickly.
Yeah, and it tells you not to hang around and sing pop. Oh, you've got to mention the music in it. The fact that they use really bad 80s pop songs. Oh,
yes, they do too, yes.
They use like Total Eclipse.
Total Eclipse, yeah.
And Bucks Fizz, the Land of Make-Believe and shit like that. So
Have you seen the YouTube clip of Total Eclipse where they act to they change the words to the video, what's actually happening on the video clip?
Yeah.
And it's very funny.
No,
obviously, seen it. Yes, that's not, joke doesn't work. All right, but
YouTube jokes don't really work on podcasting. I know you've been doing it for a while, mate, but this is just a tip from me.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, but they do pick the music. I suppose it'd be easier to get the rights to it too because the BBC was showing Eurovision at the time. Bucks Fizz won.
Well, Dean Lennox is having a slash and he's going, Total Eclipse of... That got me laughing.
Yeah, I mean, nobody dances like that in pub toilets because basically... You don't know whether you're going to be glassed or someone's going to try to pick you.
Don't you agree that was a very large toilet? I don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah, English pubs don't tend to have large slash pits, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think even for an Aussie pub, that was quite a large toilet. Pub in Fitzroy is not going to have a toilet that large.
Yeah, I mean, it was a fairly old pub too, and newer pubs tend to have a reasonable bit of elbow room when you're taking a slash.
Yeah.
But, and in fact, if you go to the 35th floor bar at the Sofitel,
oh, yes. Yeah,
they've got a glass wall at the end of the urinals.
Yes, I've done that.
And you can basically have a slash while looking down 35 floors towards the MCG.
Well, you can piss on the MCG if that
takes I tried it. To, but the glass kept getting in the friggin'
way. Your anti-sport views. They always upset me.
Yes, I know.
Anyway.
Okay, yes. Yep, so basically that's it. 83 minutes. It's full of British people and a couple of token Americans. And apparently the future is populated by Americans, according to Chris O'Dowd's character in the movie.
Yep.
And, they have there's blood and guts in there too, just to keep the horror fans happy. Okay, we're going to take another break now, and then we get into the meaty stuff, being Primer from 2004.
Excellent.
Hammer Film Productions began in 1934. And after producing almost 200 films and television programs, the studio is still releasing and re-releasing new and classic film titles. 1951 Down Place is the podcast that brings you the story of the great Hammer films, one movie at a time. Here are your hosts, describing what Hammer means to them. First is Casey.
Hammer means the beautiful and glamorous women of Hammer horror, the engaging storytelling, and amazing period films.
Joining him is Derek.
Hammer means the incredible work of actors like Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, and even Michael Ripper. The gothic storytelling, the incredible music, and the set pieces.
And finally, here's Scott.
Hammer means how to get a nail into a block of wood.
This boy has a lot to learn. Join our hosts as they make their journey through the Hammer Films catalogue and discuss each film with critical opinion, historical facts, production notes, and other information about these classic films. 1951 Downplays can be found in iTunes or their website, www.1951downplays.com.
Should I have said Hammer Pants?
1951 Downplays, the home of Hammer Films discussion.
Okay, we're back and we're on to Primer from 2004. I'll do the bit of a read on it and then we'll have a chat. Primer is a, this is from Wikipedia again. Primer is a 2004 American science fiction drama film about the accidental discovery of a means of time travel. The film was written, directed and produced by Shane Carruth and was completed on a budget of $7,000. So you were right, it wasn't 27, it was 7. Carruth graduated from college with a degree in mathematics and is a former engineer. Primer is of note for its extremely low budget, experimental plot structure, philosophical implications, and complex technical dialogue, which Carruth chose not to simplify for the sake of his audience. One reviewer said that anybody who claims he fully understands what's going on in Primer after seeing it just once is either a savant or a liar. The film collected the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance in 2004 before securing a limited release in US cinemas and has since gained a cult following. I'll just play a little bit of the dialogue from near the start of Primer and then Mondi and I can have a chat.
Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to read this and you're going to listen. You're going to stay on the line and you're not going to interrupt. You're not going to speak for any reason. Some of this you know. I'm going to start at the top of the page. Meticulous. Yes. Methodical, educated, they were these things. Nothing extreme, like anyone they varied. There were days of mistakes, laziness, and infighting. And there were days, good days, when by anyone's judgment, they would have to be considered clever. No one would say that what they were doing was complicated. It wouldn't even be considered new, except for maybe in the geological sense. They took from their surroundings what was needed, and made of it something more.
So, would you recommend this movie for people who are intellectually challenged?
No. But isn't that a great start to the film, that opening? It really sets it up.
It's enigmatic, and it kind of hints at things, and it doesn't say too much.
No.
And, well, I mean, $7,000 budget, fantastic. They filmed it on film. It wasn't something that was done on digital. It was filmed on film stock.
Oh, okay,
which
yes.
Which is probably where most of the money went.
Yeah, I was wondering what it had been filmed on because it does have that sort of grainy film texture to it. So yeah.
It does. What they did was they had a limited amount of film, so what they did was they storyboarded everything to buggery.
Yep.
And they had the ability to do maybe two takes on some things.
Yep.
And they rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed, got all the technical dialogue right because there is a lot of technical dialogue in this film. And because they storyboarded it, they could go in and film it, right, cut, print. And, yeah, because of the very low budget, they had to do it that way. They had to do all that pre-planning.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't any wiggle room if something went wrong.
Yeah, okay. Yes, because there's literally not a single special effect in this film, unless I'm – I think when he puts the hole punch little
– Yeah.
That when they're floating in the air, that's probably the only special effect.
And it's a very minor one.
It's very minor.
Because these guys are basically Silicon Valley tech nerds.
Yeah. What the hell's a JTAG?
A JTAG.
Because that's the thing they're wrapped there. They're making. They've when the film starts, they're sitting around a table. Yeah. They're putting stuff in an envelope.
Yeah.
I had no idea what the hell it was.
Hang on, I'm going to Google it. Let's Google JTAGs and see what.
And I found out it was a JTAG, but I did Google it.
Yeah.
I still didn't understand what the hell it was. And there's probably techie people who are listening to this going, "Well, it's this, you moronic."
Okay, this JTAGs are ways of hacking your Xbox. So the extra chips that you put on your Xbox.
Oh.
From what I can understand. If I'm wrong, people tell me. I'm always happy to be corrected on meaningless trivia.
Okay, so they're basically making these things.
They're making the chips you put on to hack your Xbox.
And the conversation around the tables were basically we're breaking even.
Yeah.
And there's not really much money. There's money in this, but it's not a huge amount.
Yeah.
And I think they're talking about, you know, who's going to do the next great idea.
Yeah.
Whose turn it is to come up with an idea. And then I couldn't understand part of this film, Terry. Yeah. Is that there's a lot of mumbling going on on purpose.
Yeah.
And I couldn't understand then what the great next invention was. It wasn't to build a time travel machine.
No, what they were trying to do was they were trying to build an anti-gravity machine.
I figured that out 55 times later. But the version I was watching doesn't have subtitles.
Yeah.
This is a film you need someone to do a subtitle.
You need to watch it a number of times until you can recite the dialogue to understand it. It's an incredibly complex and challenging film for something that costs about as much as a second-hand Toyota.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, the first 20 minutes is just so off-putting.
It's all in a way. And lounge rooms and backyards and garages. And it's got that feel about it. That's where the movie, it's a science fiction movie about time travel set in storage lockers.
Yeah.
And tract houses.
Exactly. And there's no concession given to the fact that it's being filmed. These people this is purely natural acting.
Mm.
There's no camera around. They're just talking as if they were to talk normally in a room as we are. Well, yeah, we've got microphones here.
There's a little bit about it here about what the intentions were. I'm just trying to find that page because it really does kind of enlighten us about it. Production, here we go. And I'm sorry I'm rustling papers because it's incredibly unprofessional. The philosophy came... He took an unusual step of eschewing contrived exposition and tried instead to portray the shorthand phrases and jargon used by working scientists. This philosophy carried over into production design. The time machine itself is a plain grey box with a distinctive electronic hum created by overlaying the sounds of a mechanical grinder and a car engine. So basically, he just overlaid two sounds on there. And he chose to deliberately obfuscate the film's plot to mirror the complexity and confusion created by time travel.
Yeah.
As he said in a 2004 interview, this machine and Abe and Aaron, they're the two characters in it, experience, are inherently complicated. So it needed to be that way in order for the audience to be where Abe and Aaron are, which was always my hope. So basically the time machine in this is a box. And what you do is you set the time machine up, set it running, have it running for the X number of hours. And what will happen is when it gets up to speed, that's the time at which you will emerge from the box. If you go into the box afterwards. So basically what you've got to do is it's like turning on your car engine, right? And having your car engine settle down. And what will happen is you'll get out of the car as soon as the engine's up and running.
Yeah.
But you'll get into the car hours later.
Yes. It's complete reverse of how you would normally think of time travel or anything. Yep. You get in when it turns off. You get out when it turns on. Mm. Yeah,
and there are incredibly subtle little bits of business in this movie too about the effects that time travel is having on them.
Yeah, the childlike handwriting.
Handwriting. Basically, there's some either mental or motor neuron effect of time travel where your handwriting becomes like a three-year-old's.
Yep.
And they're trying to write down certain stats and things, and their handwriting's all over the place. But these guys, and Caruso says it in an interview as well, these guys are ethically neutral.
Yep.
All they can think about is, what am I going to do with the time machine? I've got a time machine, I can go back 6 hours in time. What am I going to do? I'm going to find the biggest share on the share market that goes up and buy the share.
Yep.
They don't think of any philosophical or causality implications of doing that or how they're going to change the time stream or anything. It's all about, okay, how can we monetize this right from the start?
Yep.
It's not about experimenting with it and finding the parameters and finding out the effects of it and finding out whether it's going to fuck up your handwriting. It's purely about another. It's another way of
you
making
say
money
that,
off a JPEG.
But Abel, which one? Their names are very similar, so I get
Abe
confused.
And Aaron.
So Abe, which is David Sullivan. He builds the first box in the storage locker, but he also builds a failsafe. So he obviously did think that they might fuck something up, and so has built something that they can always.
He's built a failsafe, which has been going since they first activated the time machine, so they can go back in that machine.
Well, that he can, not they, he can.
That he can and reset things.
This is where, for me, after I'd watched it a few times and then read a little about it, it mostly made sense as a film. It is genuinely a difficult film to understand because it is very short and, as you say, there's no exposition. And I love that. It's refreshing.
Yeah.
You don't have characters explaining things to each other they would already know just for the sake of the audience. Really love that. But the thing that still bugs me, and Terry, please help me.
Yeah.
He sets up a fail-safe unit.
Yeah.
Okay. This is spoilers. Mm-hmm. I have slight spoilers here. That's Abe. Aaron discovers the fail-safe unit.
Yeah.
Because these things are modular, he actually uses the fail-safe unit while also taking it with him.
Yeah.
And then putting it.
Yeah, putting a second one.
in, and then a third one ultimately. And there are half an hour gaps between each one, or 10 minute, 15 minute gaps. The problem I have, this will, what I'm saying makes no sense to anyone who hasn't seen the films. If you've seen the film, you know what I'm talking about, is why didn't Abe realize that the failsafe machine that he went into was an hour later or a period later than when he set it up originally?
Well, there is the argument that because if the handwriting is going, there's probably some kind of intellectual diminution as well.
He just didn't notice.
But he didn't notice. I mean, they're all over the place. There is a vagueness to the characters as you get further in to a certain extent. So there's some kind of...
But you understand me here?
No, I do understand.
Okay, thank you.
There is
thank
a God. Psychological effect on the time travel. And basically, they fuck up. They're not meticulous in some things.
It still bugged me, though, because, and I get the feeling this is why there's reams of explanations on the internet. If anyone who's seen the film, just go look up Primer on the internet. There are literally websites devoted to the time travel involved in this film.
With diagrams.
With diagrams. Yeah. And none of them explain to me in a consistent way why that Abe wouldn't have noticed. And yes, I know what you're saying, that they might have a neuron issue.
Also,
that's,
he might have set it up in a different locker. You could have set up one of them.
Well, that's the other thing I didn't get. Did he set it up in a different locker or not? You know, those are the little questions that it would have been nice to answer. But that said, I like the fact that Carruth actually doesn't bother to answer those questions. He does leave those hanging and allows the internet to explain it if the internet wants to.
And there are little hints to, like, the fact that they start wearing earphones at one stage.
Yes, yep.
And we don't think, is that the early bit before they had Bluetooth?
Yes.
But it's not. It's something entirely different.
Yes.
And we're not going to do spoilers on that because people can find that out for themselves.
Yes, agreed. Look, I love this film, and it's worthy of love because it's very smart and it doesn't pander one iota, and it's probably one of the smartest time travel films you're likely to watch.
It is, and it doesn't talk down to the audience. It assumes that you're intelligent. It assumes that you know how to hit the rewind if you need to.
Yes.
And it assumes that
that's a good point.
You're interested enough to want to find out what's happening with it, and that's faith in their own material in a sense. They go, okay, we're going to do a $7,000 science fiction film. We're storyboarding it. We've got really limited ability to edit. Even in spite of that, it did take him a year to edit it himself.
Really?
Yeah, there was a year gap when Carruth edited the movie just to make sure that he had things the way he wanted to in sequence and the story. Made sense. He nearly gave up a couple of times.
Because he was using actual film stock. Would that have been physical cutting, or how do they do it?
Physical cutting. Okay. I mean, compared to digital, it's an incredibly...
Why didn't he just do digital?
Ask the guy. But it's one of those things where it's meticulously done, and Hollywood tends to dumb down in order to get a larger audience.
Yeah.
On a $7,000 budget, what you need is a couple of viewings, and you made your money back.
Yeah,
and they made a lot of money out of this.
What do you think of Carruth and Sullivan as actors?
I think they were workmanlike, and I think that basically both of the characters, I've got the little impression that the characters were both a bit aspy.
There's a bit of that. One of the things Carruth says is he wants you to sort of see the breakdown of their relationship, and that is in the film, but I didn't buy their relationship to begin with. One of the problems with this film is it's a lot. The technical stuff is great.
Yeah.
The actual human dynamic stuff is non-existent, especially this whole thing with that party, which is at the core of the film. I don't want to spoil too much, but I didn't buy into any of that. I didn't understand the motivations as to why the Carruth character felt the need to constantly come back to this party, considering it's not his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And, you know,
he wanted to be the hero or something.
But why though? Characters aren't developed enough.
Yeah, one of the problems is $7,000 movie, you're not going to get that.
I know.
And the characters are secondary to the ideas.
That, which is why I wondered why they needed that to be that in the first place. You know, why there needed to be that sort of party motivation.
Well, I think the party's there to show that they're willing to fuck around with things for their own means. It's a demonstration of the fact that, they're willing to fuck with causality.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it could have been done better in other ways, of course, but this is pretty much a one-man band movie.
I agree. Look, don't get me wrong. I love the film. There are little issues that bug me just on a storytelling level.
Yeah.
And that's one of the real tough things when you're trying to, as you, I think you said, eschew exposition.
Yeah.
You're going to have that stage where you don't want to tell the audience too much because you want them to figure it out, but shit, there's this whole character thing going on. Do we need to build that up? But then I have to give exposition because I have to explain the interrelations going on here and why my character wants to do X.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. And therefore, you, again, have to sort of piece it together. And I don't think that works.
Yeah, I mean, that's, again, is one of the limitations. I mean, you look at another really cheap movie like El Mariachi.
Yeah.
There are holes in that like that too, but the fact that he made a feature film on that budget.
Yeah.
Which people are talking about, which is...
Still talking about 8 years later.
Yeah, which has become a cult film.
Yeah.
It's credit to him. And the thing is that basically it's a garage project. It's like making furniture in your own garage. It's not going to be as smooth and machined and engineered as an IKEA piece, but it's going to be more interesting.
Yeah, look, if Hollywood had got their hands on this, it'd have been fucked. Let's be honest.
And it would have had, like, some pop song in the background at various times.
There's no music at all, is there? It's all the hums of the...
yeah, purely background noise and the mechanical hums and things. And I mean, I think they spent most of the money on film stock and petrol.
Where is Carruth? Why have we not seen a follow-up to Primer?
I'll find out what's happening.
There was a project he was working on, but, I mean, obviously this is 7-8 years old now.
Mm-hmm. What is it? Shane Carruth, isn't it?
Yeah, Shane Carruth.
See, this is what we can do. I think I put it 1-2
It is hours. Very cool that you keep checking in real time, Terry.
Yes, I can do that because we're so good at chatting with each other.
And because we live in the internet age, that helps too.
Okay, let's see. He did Primer. His next project was going to be A Topiary. Ryan Johnson also posted, Shane has a – Ryan Johnson who's doing Looper. Bruce Willis and Joseph
Which is out soon,
Said, Shane has a mind-blowing sci-fi script. It's all part of the movie gods, he gets it soon. So basically what I think it is he's stuck in development hell.
Okay.
Which is a shame. But, someone wins a prize at Sundance. All the money vultures start circling.
Well, has this made money?
Money. Yeah, basically made. How can you not make a profit on $7,000?
Well,
I mean, shit, you could go to markets and sell copies of them along with illegal downloads and make $7,000.
Agreed. But has it actually? I mean, do we know how much it made?
In this, let's see. I've got it here. Let's see. Production, blah blah blah. Physics and science. We're going to ignore that because it's a science fiction podcast. It'll be in here somewhere. $424,760 at the box office. DVD, it's good. You know, people buying the DVD hand out fist.
So Shane Carruth's made some money out of this. He's probably paid the actors and.
Yeah, and also, there are going to be things like somebody who does that kind of movie and wins the Sundance thing. They're going to bring him in to do various runovers of other people's scripts and things.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, so you think he's had his hands here, there?
I mean, he's done a few things, but it's one of those things where. I mean, like Chris Marker. Chris Marker made La Jetée.
Yep.
And he made another number of other interesting experimental films, but all people remember before is La Jetée. So I think it's kind of in there. I think he's a really ambitious filmmaker.
Carruth. Yeah.
But, he's not that old, so there's still a chance for him to kind of find the right project, get it up and running, get it out there, and see what happens. So, yeah, but Primer, a really, really tough movie, really challenging.
It is genuinely hard. It's not one of those films where you go and say, so you know, Usual Suspects. I remember people walking out and saying, I didn't understand any of that. You think, oh, that difficult. It's.
I'll tell you the truth. I picked it about 20 minutes from the end.
Yeah. The whole Kaiser Soze thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not that difficult.
No.
And so you look at something and go, okay. Yeah. This film is genuinely difficult. Yeah. This is not an easy film. It's actually you watch it, the first 50 minutes are reasonably, even with the time travel elements, are reasonably straightforward. But when they start doing.
Fucking with the timelines.
Yeah. That's when it really begins to go up the wazoo with no special effects.
Yeah. And the thing is, you don't need special effects to tell a good story.
No.
And I kind of like that. I mean, I like effects movies. I saw Battleship and, it's a big meathead.
Oh, you've seen Battleship?
I've seen Battleship. It's a big meathead science fiction action film.
Don't you have a ban on all CGI films?
No, I don't. the fact that they do a handbrake turn with a battleship is kind of cool.
Was it fun? Did you enjoy it?
I kind of liked it, yeah. Okay. I mean, there are some aspects of it. I kind of like the alien design.
Okay.
And the fact they got bristles on their chin that are actually like porcupine quills.
Okay.
And those little bits and pieces.
High on cheese.
Yeah, it's high on cheese. Yeah. And you could tell it was a summer blockbuster action film. I don't think the characterization was particularly deep, but you don't expect it in that kind of film. And then there are some interesting minor actors. The guy with no legs.
Okay.
And things like that. But, it's one of those ones where we got it really cheap on DVD. There's a deal where you get 3 for $2 down at JB Hi-Fi. So we picked up the two movies we wanted and then grabbed Battleship as the third one.
Okay. So it is actually in this house as we speak.
It is in this house. It's in
with a copy of Primer in this house.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got the whole lot. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to loop back in time after this and get a few more copies of Primer. But I don't mind it. There are movies where you just go along for the spectacle.
Yeah.
But this one, you've really got to pay attention. Normally I'm watching a movie with a laptop.
Yeah.
I'm kind of doing a few other things. You can't do that with Primer.
No.
You're either there or you're... don't bother watching it.
No, and you can't, even from the beginning you can't. I mean, there's no time travel in the beginning.
No.
But there's all that sort of mumbly, non-exposition.
I've got another clip to just show this kind of stuff, so I'll play that second clip because I hacked it out of there and might as well use it.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Why not the lottery?
Well, we can if you want. That's not till Saturday. But even if we win the full 10 million, it's only a couple hundred thousand a year for what, the next 30 years?
Only.
And that's just one good trade.
A couple days like this.
I was just running a test, in and out.
Okay, well, I want to do what you did, okay? Exactly what you did.
Okay, the first thing I did is call in sick.
Okay, I did that.
And then I drove to the storage facility.
Okay, but I need to drop Lauren off at school first.
Okay, then meet me there. We're going to need both cars. But we need to park yours way down the road, out of sight of the facility.
Wait, why are we doing that?
Because we need a ride home.
What is that?
No, it'll make sense.
Okay, no, I'll be patient.
When I got to the storage room, I flooded the box with argon, and... then I had to tighten it up to secure the leaks.
There's leaks?
There's always leaks. At 8:30 a.m., I set the timer for 15 minutes, jumped in the car, and drove to Russell Field.
Okay, I lost it.
What?
Why the timer?
Because the moment we start those machines is the moment we'll end up getting out of them, and...
Right, got it, sorry.
I don't want to be standing around when they do.
Yep.
While I was on the road at 8:45, the machine kicked on by itself, and by 8:49, it was completely warmed up. In Russell Field, I got a hotel room and tried to isolate myself.
Wait, what do you mean, isolate?
I mean, I closed the windows, I unplugged everything in the room, the telephone, TV, clock, radio, everything. I didn't want to take the chance of running into someone I knew or seeing something on the news that might, if we're dealing with causality, and I don't even know for sure, I just...
What?
Took myself out of the equation.
Err on the side of caution.
Yes.
Yeah, so the whole movie's like that.
Even the exposition there is not... your normal Hollywood exposition. They're constantly cutting into each other. You know, the bit where he goes, why'd you do that? Oh, I did it because, oh, yeah, okay. You know, it's that sort of...
Yeah, they cut off their own sentences.
Yeah, correct. Things, yeah. It's so you're just thinking, oh, fuck yeah, an explanation. Oh.
Yeah. But it doesn't spoon feed you. And one of the problems is that we're so accustomed to the Hollywood way of doing things. When we get something like this, there's an incredible disconnect that you've got to overcome.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this movie does it. It's a good, solid science fiction.
There was music there, though. I thought there was none in the film, but there was. It was with that piano.
It's just basically piano tinkling and stuff. It's atonal almost. Kind of music. It's there basically hitting keys to build up tension and to kind of emphasize certain bits.
That is a great moment in the film, that bit where he explains how time travel works. And that's it. Without really much exposition, and the imagery works with the voices, and it's just...
And they're showing what they were doing as well while the voiceover is going through.
A lot of people have read a lot in that line of, there's always leaks.
Yeah.
There's, again, and I think websites devoted just to that sentence, so...
some people way too much time. But, yeah, basically, you need to flood the chamber with argon gas to make it work, and they carry oxygen tanks with them in order to be able to breathe, and they've got to spend the same time in the... machine as the time since the machine started in order to come out the other end.
Yeah, correct. So they age, their own body clock ages forward while they're going backwards.
Yeah.
And we do see that if they go out a little bit a bit late, or they don't time it correctly, they feel sick. So it's all internally consistent. It all makes sense, and I bet you Mr. Carruth has a flow chart.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd have to because he wouldn't be able to make the movie without it. It's been storyboarded as well, so he's probably got immense numbers of storyboards.
And I am very happy to know that he's made at least $500,000 just from box office.
Yeah.
And probably more from DVD because this thing deserves that sort of pat on the back.
And that's the thing, finding the interesting stuff that's way out there. I mean, that's the whole point of the Martian Drive-In podcast, to find the interesting stuff people maybe don't know about.
Yeah.
It's not mainstream Hollywood science fiction, but it's the interesting, meaty stuff. It may only be a snack. This movie's fairly short.
Yeah.
And it's low budget, but it's a very tasty snack.
It is very tasty. And you will, first time I watched it, it wasn't, I actually have seen it prior to this podcast. Yeah. I watched it immediately after, I watched it twice straight on. I just had to. You have to.
Yeah, and that's it. So give yourself a little time and a bit of space if you're going to watch it. But we do recommend that you do.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%.
That's probably one of the best science fiction time travel movies of the last couple of decades.
I agree, absolutely. It is a it's a corker.
Yeah, and it's interesting that they mentioned Rian Johnson there, who's doing Looper, which is another science fiction time travel movie upcoming with
Bruce. Except with all the action bits in between.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. And he did Brick as well, which was like a film noir set in high school.
Rian Johnson is fantastic. He did The Brothers Bloom.
Yep.
He did Brick, both fantastic films. And is Looper his third, or has he done one in between?
I think he may have done another one, but I'm not entirely sure. But I do want to see Looper. I'll see any movie with Bruce Willis in it.
Yeah, Rian Johnson's one of those guys, you always turn up to one of his films. You're going to get something decent out of it. So Brick's... I love Brick.
Brick is fantastic.
You did Brick on his podcast? You should.
When it comes up, I'll do it in Paleo Cinema. It becomes 20 years old.
How old's Brick now?
Brick's about it's about contemporary with Primer.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, maybe a little bit later, 2006.
Let me get this straight, Terry. You're going to be doing Paleo Cinema for at least another 15 years, just so you can do a podcast on Brick?
Well, no, I was planning on dying next month. Oh, fuck. Let's see. Brick, Rian Johnson. I'll find out when it came out.
I'm still astounded that you're
2005.
So by at least 2025, you can expect that Paleo Cinema Brick podcast.
Yeah. It's a date, everybody. So, write it in your diaries, whatever your diary is going to be in 2025, and we'll do it.
Straight into the cerebral cortex.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
All right.
So it'll be my voice into your brain. Anyway, we probably should wrap up Primer there. I won't make you stay around for the feedback because it's getting late and you got a family.
I can.
Oh, okay.
Is it dull?
Well, it could be. We'll find out. How about you stick around and find out?
All right, fine.
We'll take another break.
Okay.
And when we get back, we'll do the feedback.
Yo, yo, yo. Terry Frost. This is Dr. Zom. I just want to give you a shout out. I haven't not been. I guess it's because it's summer and it's really hot over here. And, which, you would think because it's really hot outside, I'd be inside, and not out in all this oppressive heat from the global warming and all that stuff. But basically what I'm doing is not watching as many movies as what I usually been watching. But I did, because we got some Martian Drive-In. I gotta ditch this. That's not working at all. It's just not working. Martian Drive-In. Well, I watched the movie, and guess what? It takes place on Mars, and I know you're a big sci-fi fan. You are a big sci-fi fan. Big. It's called John Carter. This movie it seemed to get a lot of shit. For as much as it cost, and it didn't really do that well at the box office. I had some theories on that, one being the name of the movie. If you're not familiar with the stories or the comic books or, the books, this comic book and everything, just the name John Carter is kind of like flat, and you might not know what the hell it's about. But I liked it. I really did. I think that they, it's about 2 hours long. They took their time to tell the story and tell it, pretty much give you enough. I mean, it took enough time to give you the whole story, but it was action packed and a raucous adventure. I really enjoyed it, and I think that word of mouth, hopefully, crossing my fingers and toes, will carry over with this, and maybe we'll get to see some more. It seems to me it's almost like a Firefly kind of a thing, where most of the people that I know that went to see it really liked it. It's a Disney movie, and thinking about it after the fact, I think that You know, it's the kind of movie that you can take, you know, younger kids to go see. It does have violence in it, but like blood and stuff like that's usually green or, you know, blue or something, you know. But anyway, I really liked it. This is, you know, the Martian drive-in, you know, slash paleo cinema, slash, I don't know, Guns N' Roses. Anyway, yes, John Carter. I imagine that you have seen it because you are a vociferous consumer of science fiction. But if you have any comments about John Carter, I never read the actual pulp books. I read the comic books, and it was known as John Carter, Warlord of Mars. I think something like that might have helped as far as the title goes. But we'll see, you know, maybe it was because he wasn't quite the Warlord of Mars yet. Anyway, I just want to go and say hi, Steve. Yeah, I just woke up. And hope everything is well in the country that you live in. Is it Japan? I don't know. Whatever that place is. Say hello to the old. Hey, say hello to the old lady and you know, the cats and stuff. Okay, me. Say hello. All right, Mr. Frost. I just want to give you a shout. Talk to you later. Brother.
That's the famous Zom.
Yeah, konnichiwa, motherfucker.
That's I've heard Zom before, but that's fantastic.
Yep, it is. And yes, I have seen John Carter, and I've got it on Blu-ray. I've seen it twice now, and I kind of think it works. I think, yeah, they marketed it really badly. And Taylor Kitsch is okay, but I don't think he's quite at the level of charisma you need.
Where was he from?
Some TV series in America.
Okay.
And then with a name like Kitsch, it's awkward. But, yeah, I mean, Lynn Collins was good playing Deja Thoris, the Princess of Mars. There's some great special effects. There's good CGI monsters. They've got Willem Dafoe looking like no Willem Dafoe you've ever seen before. And, yeah, it's a bit of fun. I read the books and I read the comics with the Gil Kane artwork and all that kind of thing.
Is the Rice Burrows readable?
I haven't read them since I was, like, 14.
Okay.
So anything was readable then.
It's about a decade ago.
Well, yeah, at least. yeah, so we got Decimal Courage a decade ago, didn't we?
Yeah.
But, no, yeah, I mean, at the time I read them because I'd read everything. I was reading voraciously. Yeah. Still do to a certain extent, but. Yeah, they're kind of readable. They were written a century ago, so you've got to make – and they were written as a pulp kind of thing. So you've got to make allowances for that. You're not going to get, you know, too much subtlety and nuance in a pulp thing from 1912. But, yeah, they worked, and they were incredibly popular. I read all the stuff. I read the Tarzan things. I read them. I read the one set on Venus, the whole bunch of them. A lot of them came out in New English Library editions in the 70s. So
Okay. You
could pick them up for lunch money.
Yeah, and the American Library's done special editions of them as well recently.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. But just Zom, what a character.
Zom is a lovely person, and he's been a terrific supporter of the podcast. He's always reliable. If I put a shout-out to Zom to send me a voicemail, Zom will send me a voicemail, and you never know what it's going to be. There's no predictability in this man. He's a random motherfucker. He's Zom, and we love him for it. And I'm glad that he actually put something in for rather than paleo cinema, but for the Martian drive-in. I know it's not his specialty, science fiction, but he's keeping the faith.
Yeah, good on him.
Yep.
Well done, Zom.
Yeah, thank you, Zom. And I've got another voicemail here.
Hi, Dr. Linker. This is Kathy. I'm sorry I didn't call you back right away. I was on the phone with the card to be attending. You can page me again, 314-0278, and I'll try you again. Thanks.
I have no fucking idea what that is. Somebody left me a voicemail thinking I was Dr. Linker. So because this comes through as a voicemail, I'm putting it in the podcast. Fuck it.
That's the best bit of feedback I've ever heard.
Yeah, and I hope she did get in touch with Dr. Lincoln because it could be something serious. I tell you what else I got. You're going to love this too. I think it may have been the same person. Who knows? What happened was you can get faxes through this facility I've got.
Okay.
So I got a fax with two medical bills for two American patients in Seattle. So I did my Google search to find out who the fuck the doctor is. And I sent them a very polite email with attachments of these faxes I got saying, you really shouldn't be sharing these doctor's bills with random Australians. And I got a nice polite email back.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. And I got a nice polite email back saying, thank you for sending them back. We apologize that it happened. So they were very nice about it, but I thought that they should know that they, otherwise I keep getting faxes with doctor's bills.
And this is a free American service that you've
set
up here.
Yeah, it's K7, so I've got a free voicemail line.
Anyone can do this.
Yeah, and I get two kinds of faxes. I've got those ones.
Yep.
And I get these weird fax spam things for Caribbean cruises. And I don't know why the fuck I do, but I do. It's just part of the fun. It's part of the mystery and the magic of podcasting.
Hello, Terry. This is Rich Palmer. I'm the guy who designed the logo for your new show, The Martian Drive-In Podcast. I'm really enjoying your new show, or as you might say, I have a lot of time for it. I really like the News from Mars segments. If you ever run short of planetary items, you could always report on the latest Mars bar candy news, maybe events happening in and around Mars, Pennsylvania. Maybe not. I've been listening to your Paleo Cinema podcast for a while, and it's directed me to several great films I hadn't heard of before. Alphaville was everything I wanted in a new discovery. I couldn't imagine a film that had gotten past my film noir and sci-fi filter, so I thank you for bringing that to my attention. I think you provide a great introduction to the movies you discuss, and if you ever want a recommendation for what wine goes with a certain film, I can always provide that on my podcast, Rotcast. For example, a wine that would go well with Dark City might be Maize Sauvignon Blanc. This is because the world of Dark City is put together like a rat maze. And when John Murdoch wakes up, he's a blank slate. I haven't tried maize wine yet, but there you go. Amazing. I remember you mentioned actress Melissa George, star of Triangle. I always found her appearance as a standout moment in Dark City, not just because she delivers her lines well or she gets a little nude, but because she actually lightens the movie. Most of the action is at night and in the dark, so when light bounces off her pale body and blonde hair, she relieves the darkness for a bit. I'm looking forward to watching her in Triangle, where she'll have more to do. I hope to send you more feedback. Thanks again, Terry.
Yeah, thanks for that, Rich. And thanks for the logo. I'm putting together a bunch of stuff that I'm sending you, as we discussed offline, in return for the logo. And there should be a few little bits and pieces in there that you'll find very interesting. But the sound quality on your audio is fantastic.
You've got the best fans.
Yeah, I know. They've got better sound.
No, they better sound quality than your own podcast.
Yeah.
And they give you gifts.
Yeah, well, they do. That's because I just shit miracles and piss wonders. But, yeah, Alphaville. I love Alphaville. But, I mean, a science fiction movie set in Paris, set on a planet in another galaxy, and all they do is use Parisian scenes to portray an alien landscape and an alien culture. It's just a mind-blowingly fun movie.
I need to check it out.
You're going to have to check out Alphaville. We're going to have to educate you. It's not all Doctor Who, you know.
I have a slot. You know, I've been watching David Lynch all week.
Yeah.
All right. And Melissa George is in Mulholland Drive.
Naomi Watts.
No, it's Naomi Watts is the main squeeze. But George is in about 50. Yeah, she's in it. Trust me.
Okay. Well, I'm willing to believe you. But
doesn't get a top off that. Naomi Watts does that.
Naomi Watts does. And that's always a good thing, too. I rewatched King Kong with Naomi Watts and a monkey.
Okay.
And that is way too long. It's like somebody give Peter Jackson a gig doing a half-hour TV episode just to give him perspective, for fuck's sake.
Hobbit's probably 6 hours.
Oh, yeah. All you get is like 75 hours of guys in 1930s costumes with Tommy guns shooting various CGI weather monsters and Jack Black running away from dinosaurs. That's basically it. And Naomi Watts doing cartwheels in front of a monkey. That is it. And you cut to the chase, get to New York, climb the building, swat down a couple of airplanes. That's what the audience.
How long does the original go for?
The original's not anywhere near that long. The original's like 90 minutes. It's a standard Hollywood film.
Okay.
But this one just went on forever. Like, you know, it takes them about 17 days to get to New York. And that's real time in the cinema, it's not anything else. And, you know, there are all these endless scenes of the ship going around rocks as it heads towards Skull Island. And, you know, it's just an indulgent piece of shit. I mean, the CGI is impressive. And that big thing that bites the head off the guy who played Gollum was really good. But, yeah, it's just basically hopeless. Now, let me see if I've got any, like, email I can read out kind of voicemails. I'll just go to my Gmail and do that because, again, it's entertaining while I fiddle around with my computer while I'm podcasting.
And I'm watching you fiddle. That's the disturbing part.
Watch and learn, grasshopper.
You have emotion that I've not seen in a human.
I've got 59,000 things in my inbox on my Gmail.
Isn't there like a limit?
Yes, and I'm about a third the way to that limit.
Oh, okay.
Podcast comments. Here we go. I got the voice message. Let's have a look here. Oh, yeah, I did get an email from the Brian from Hammockus podcast, which I recommend highly, as highly as I do Writer and the Critic and Shooting the Pooh. But Brian says, I'm really enjoying The Martian Drive-In. Really good choices so far, and I love the banter with your co-hosts. Can you send me the trailer, please? Yes, I'll send you the trailer. And, yeah, so Brian, anytime we should really get you on the podcast. I should Skype with you on one of the podcasts again. So we'll do that at some stage if you're not too busy editing together a movie about hobos. Let me see what else I've got. I think his latest movie's about hobos. Yeah, I've got these.
Like I say, you've got awesome fans.
I've got awesome fans. They're interesting. And I got one from our friend Rickster, who has been a fan of paleo cinema since the word go.
Yes, I remember you reading.
He's like a paleo cinema fan.
I remember you reading Rickster comment.
Yep. Rickster says, just a personal note. Oh, hang on. Yeah, great. So I just started reading. It says, just a personal note. Okay, well, we'll skip to the bits that aren't personal. So I do apologize for reading out anything that you might not like, Rickster, but basically, he's been listening to every podcast, including The Martian Drive, and congrats on that as well. But I just wanted to let me know that he hasn't been going anywhere. He's still an avid listener. Paleo Cinema is still going great, and I wanted to let you know that I'm still here and breathing. That's good news because I do like an audience with a pulse. Zombies don't tend to listen to podcasts. I'm not sure whether you're aware of that or whether The Walking Dead has covered that yet, but you don't see many of them there sitting there with iPod earbuds in. And then offering feedback. So, yeah, keep the pulse going, Rickster. Keep the breathing going. And I do want to kind of keep warm bodies in my audience. I'm not got no prejudice against zombies, vampires, or other things, but they are really, really shit feedbackers.
But to be serious, it's support of old-time fans like Rickster that really keep – I mean, we've got old-time fans too. We've been going for a couple of years. They keep you going. They keep you –
I mean, the feedback, podcasting. Feedback is the oxygen for a podcast.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And it really is great. And I've had maybe one negative comment in the whole lot, which was that stupid time when I submitted Paleo Cinema for a podcast reviewing podcast and they didn't get it. I'm not going to do that again. But and on the whole, the audience has been fantastic. Even the people who don't feedback.
You don't do the Twitter, do you?
I do some Twitter.
Because we get quite a lot of feedback via Twitter more than by
Yeah, that's because they don't have to say very much. They've got 140 characters. Go, yes, Mondi and Kirsten, I liked it a lot, but Mondi was too much of a dick. And that's about as much as you can fit in to a Twitter feed.
Maybe we've got a different type of fan than you do, Terry.
Yeah, brief is what you've got.
Brief, thank you.
Yeah, I've got Zom doing accents, so you beat that.
Yeah.
But, so that's – I'm going to just do another check here because if I forget anybody, they're going to cry into their noodle soup. Let's see. Oh, yeah, I did get one from Morris, our mate Morris, who does the Love That Album podcast. You know Morris's sister.
I do?
Yeah, Sue.
Oh.
Yeah. Here we go. Hey, Terry, on my way to work, I heard the first half of MDIP and heard you guys talking about mixed reels in cinemas. About 20 years ago, I was talking about...
Oh, Susu?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I was talking about how the first time I saw Cube, they got the reels mixed up. They had two reel threes and no reel four.
Okay.
So mixed reels in cinemas. About 20 years or so ago, I took my sister-in-law and her husband to the Cinematheque to see Proof with Russell Crowe and Hugo Weaving, a good film.
Yep.
A film we really love. This was not the first time I'd seen it. On this occasion, the Cinematheque projectionist mixed up a couple of the reels up, and nothing occurred as being strange to me. The nature of the film was such that it made no difference at all. I'm not terribly observant that way. Enjoyed your chat with Sonia and Grant. Digressions are good. Cheers, Morris. Thanks, Morris, and I was glad to get you onto Paleo Cinema last time. and having a bit of a chat with you there. Yeah, and again, love that album podcast. The community that Morris has built online too with Love That Album and the discussion page is really good. A lot of feedback on there, so he's doing really well with that.
That's another Aussie podcast.
It's another Aussie podcast. It's another Melbourne podcast. Morris and I actually did FaceTime. We sat in a cafe and had a chat for 25 minutes. And we're going to have to do some FaceTime again.
Okay. Very nice.
But, yeah, we Skyped the last one. Basically, what happened with the last Paleo Cinema was Morris chased his family into the bedrooms.
Yes.
So we could podcast at night.
Yeah.
He made them go to bed early. The whole lot, including his wife.
He forced them to go to bed early.
I don't know where the gunpoint was used, but he did in some means coerce them into keeping quiet while we did what we do.
Okay, lovely.
Yep. So that's about it for this time around. Mondi, thank you, mate.
It's been amazing, Terry. Yep.
And I should mention your podcast again, Writer and a Critic with the lovely Kirsten.
Yep.
And Shooting the Poo with the pretty ugly Dave and Mitch.
Yeah, you can put links up if you want or not.
I will put links up for you. That's and, nice. I mean, it's interesting you do podcasts with an attractive person and two ugly people.
I know, it's amazing.
Yep.
Which is which?
And a very good writer as well. I've got to give her credit for that.
Kirsten is an excellent writer.
I've got my copy of Madison Mind sitting there.
Yep.
Okay, and the other, I'm going to name check the other people. B-Movie Cast with Vince, Mary, and a cast of thousands. The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema again. Silver and Gold, the Zom and Pickleloaf podcast where they go to town and stomp the shit out of any movie they come near. 51 Down Place, which Brother D's new project does Hammer Films. Hammicus, of course, which does Hammer and Amicus. Galactic Suburbia, I've got to mention the Feminist Cabal. And, of course, Morris's Love That Album podcast. This has been a very long one. I've gone 1 hour 38 minutes. Wasn't 1 minute 38, wasn't it?
It was a bit more than that.
Yeah, it was. So basically it's going to be 1 hour and 40 minutes, so you may have to watch it in two chunks. And that's about it. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another Paleo Cinema. I may do a solo one because I missed doing a solo one. I've done podcasts with other people.
Yeah, it's because us guests, we keep interfering, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, you're in my eye line, man. But, yeah, and again, thanks, Monty.
It's a pleasure, mate.
And we'll be back in 2 weeks and then 4 weeks again with another Martian Drive-In podcast. Catch you later and keep watching the skies.
See ya.
Yeah.